Who all watched it? Movie.
Right now.
Okay. I mean, I won't be mad if you're talking about it. I don't know.
I talked about it a lot last week, so.
I would love to talk about it.
Okay.
I mean, I am still at full hit points, and I have a murder sword, so I'm not too worried about this fight.
Yeah, but that murder sword is also our enemy, so.
What?
And your enemy, so I'm not too worried.
If he's the only person left alive, does the sword attack him?
I continue to attack anything that moves.
Yeah, he'll just walk.
Even your reflection.
He'll just walk until he finds something to attack.
So should we have spare characters on the wings? That's all I'm wondering.
I mean, that's up to you.
Because if it's coming back as a geezer.
There is, you know, you can put him down.
Can they?
I don't know.
Can we?
We may have to find out.
That's a good question.
This is like freaking Dylan's dream scenario.
That's okay.
I mean, every time I swing at them and accidentally kill a gnat, I heal.
That's true.
Oh, you got to be rolling percentiles to kill insects, yeah.
But, I mean, just keep in mind, this is the first item.
We should take something like summon woodland animals or something. So when he goes into a rage, we can just summon a million squirrels and run away.
Yeah.
We're hot. Hey, welcome, everybody.
We're hot. Hey, everybody. We're just talking about the weekend show during the
midweek show. Yeah, because you know we're geeks and it's shit we think about.
So I would love to, unless someone has something else they want to talk about to start.
No, man, we'll start.
Just a statement. The family is now watching like the last 5 minutes of the Avatar cartoon now up there. We finally
got through.
Like we finished the live action and then they started on that and made it all the way through.
Okay. Oh, they're watching the finale?
Yeah. I watched, like they just finished up the Fire Lord, but it's like the last 5 minutes. I just had to walk away because
it's
8 o'clock. But
gotcha.
I got the kid the Avatar role playing starter set this weekend. So
nice. Oh,
cool. Been making characters.
I was curious about how that was. I hadn't heard a review.
People at the shop said it was real good. I was going to buy it anyway. So I brought it up to the counter, and they said it was a real good adaptation. So
cool.
He already went online and ordered the extra, like the D&D Beyond version of it, where you can do all the stuff online.
Oh, nice.
Because there was a discount if you got the starter set. So I don't know. That's what he's doing. He's using his own money. I don't care.
Wait, your kid has his own money?
Yeah, we got
allowance.
A card you can load. So there's if he gets birthday money, if he gets whatever, he puts it on there. Both the kids have cards. And so you load their chore money, you load any money they give you for other stuff, and they can spend it like a regular card.
Yeah, Amazon. Wow. Packages come in every day.
Well, it's not a credit card, so they don't have the money. They don't get to spend it.
I backed the Avatar game when it was on Kickstarter.
So you have like some fancy set?
I guess.
Okay, I didn't know
how many years there were. I've got the Kickstarter version plus dice and. Oh, I don't even know.
I knew they had made one, but I had forgotten about it and then never heard any buzz about it.
When Jeff said he backed it, I figured, okay, well, we'll get around to it then. I don't have to worry. But
yeah, it might be has to be something we play in person since he's the only one with stuff.
I'd have to look and see. I didn't go looking through it all. I've been just tired, but. Kid was super excited about it, so
yeah. Well, that four part, that finale of that series is pretty awesome. So
yeah, like I forgot how much like the last probably three, four episodes, yeah, like the animation style just changed to like a full on serious anime.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They went out with a bang.
It's like a whole season's worth of animation budget just on the last like three, four episodes.
Yeah, and the music budget for some of the fights and shit.
They did exactly what they needed to do, and that's why everybody loves that series.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it wasn't based on a toy line. You know, it was like out of nowhere.
Was a fully immersive before, or no?
No. No, all that stuff came after the cartoon. So this was created to be a Nickelodeon animation, and they put so much thought into that world. It deserves every recognition it gets.
Right. I mean, I'm just excited that like the live action was so good that they can pretty much guarantee you're going to be able to make the other two seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, they already renewed it. It's set in stone.
Are they just going to do like 2 and 3 as like a double filming? Yep. Or?
I don't know if they're doing it as a double filming or how they're doing it, but they did say they've picked it up. They will do the 3-season arc, and then that is where this will end.
Okay.
So
not going to be a Stranger Things season 5 15 years later.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think the fan base would allow them to just make up shit about those characters and carry on.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if you fast forwarded.
Yeah, but Republic City, they got
Legend of Korra and stuff like that.
I don't want to see him build Republic City. That was the thing I don't know. It's almost like Korra ruined Aang.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it just went too far ahead too fast in my mind. I wasn't done with the world they created. Then they went and changed the world entirely. You know what I mean?
I didn't actually watch Legend of Korra. We're gonna watch that next.
It's not bad. Like, it's definitely a different show.
Yeah.
It had been 60 years.
So fantasy worlds don't change that fast because they have magic systems that replace any need to advance. You know, this is why fantasy realms stay in medieval times for millions of years.
That was one of the things I loved about it, was that they finally didn't stick to the old tropes.
Well, that's okay. You're allowed to be wrong.
Listen here.
I mean, you've been wrong before. I've been here for it. I know.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's okay. I won't think any less of you.
Okay.
For a while.
Okay. Wow. So anyways.
So much love.
You talked about Damsel last week.
I did.
So I watched Damsel this weekend.
Why did you watch it? What was the turning point? Was it a certain voice actor that really brought you to the door?
I mean, I was already interested in it. I'm not going to lie. I was already interested in watching the movie before I knew that Shohei was the voice of the dragon. But then it was just like, oh, well, I mean, she's the voice of the dragon. I got to watch this. Like, now.
Yeah, she fucking perfect fit for that. Did the dragon have a name beside the dragon?
I don't think so.
I couldn't remember either. So,
I have lots of things to say about this movie.
Okay.
Nothing that I would say is like I don't have significant problems with it outside of the story was a little formulaic, a little like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was fairy tale-ish, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was a fairy tale. Like, I'm not mad about that.
It was just a little bit, kind of a one slight twist on the fairy tale mythology.
Yeah.
There's no Prince to save her.
The art direction for the dragon, that style, was not what I expected from a medieval styling show.
It definitely felt different.
That was more of like a...
It felt a little out of place.
A Chinese or Eastern dragon. I didn't think
it was like skinny long ones.
It was like this weird...
It was kind of like a lion lizard.
Lion, dragon.
Okay.
But, like, I thought it looked great.
It did look cool. I just wasn't a fan of that type of dragon.
Well, I know. You're not.
I'm a purist. What can I say?
I prefer the fat dragon.
I did love the fat dragon. That was an awesome character.
Oh, I didn't watch it. Is there an actual fat dragon?
Better dragons, I'm just... The Dungeons and Dragons movie, there is a fat dragon.
It's fucking epic.
Yeah.
When that character shows up, it's just like, that's fucking awesome.
The special effects involved with the dragon's breath weapon.
The molten lava kind of
that, yes.
That was fucking cool. It was either like lava or napalm.
Yes.
Kind of like a burning gel. Yeah.
So badass.
And it seemed so much more deadly.
Yes, it felt real. Like, it felt like, oh, this creature that is able to conjure flame, this is what this would be like.
Yeah.
It's like, it was almost like molten phlegm.
Yeah, it was flammable excrement.
Yes. I loved it. I loved the
vomit, I guess.
I love the attitude that they gave her.
Yeah, she, by the time our character eyeballs, the character we're following, gets to her, she's pretty set in her ways and pretty confident in her, you know, she's just toying with them.
Yes.
But it's still as intelligent and as arrogant as that dragon seemed, I can't help but think she would still see herself as being used or tricked or trapped. You know, it's like, no, I want to go lay waste to your kingdom. Fuck your petty throwaway princess.
That was
even if I thought it was their princess, you know.
I will agree, that was a little, it was an odd story beat, but okay, it served the story. I'm not gonna...
Yeah, it made the story possible, so.
Yeah, I'm not gonna make too much of a mess about it. I loved Ray Winstone's portrayal of her father.
I did like that he came, if you haven't seen it, it's definitely going to ruin it. He has some kind of change of heart.
Yes.
That was cool. And that he had to pay for it.
Yes. Yes.
He didn't get off scot-free for changing his mind.
There felt like actual tangible consequences to actions.
Yes. There was a lot of consequences in that movie.
Yes.
None for the main character. She didn't really have consequences. I mean, she got healed. She goes home. Her home is going to be fine. Apparently, maybe.
I mean,
who hurt her got stomped.
I mean, that's pretty stereotypical fantasy stuff, though. I mean,
yeah, but
it was still a fairy tale.
Yeah, I didn't really see consequences for her. She was the victim, and she saved herself was the only twist, I think.
But to be fair, in the standard fairy tale story kind of genre, that's a pretty big goddamn twist.
Yeah. This was a book, correct?
I don't know.
Yes.
I think I saw that it was based on a novel or story by somebody.
Yeah, I had no idea.
So, I mean, that's where Netflix and these places get these ideas. They don't just pull them out their ass.
Well, sure. I would probably give it, like, if I were going to IMDb, like, IMDb rating, I'd probably give it a, like, 6.5 on the IMDb ratings.
My rating, I guess, would be whether or not I'd watch it again. And I probably won't watch it again, but if somebody sat down and wanted to watch it, I wouldn't be offended to sit there and watch it. It just wouldn't be my choice kind of thing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going on my way to watch it again, but I would watch it with somebody. Just to, half the time, I will watch something I've seen 100 times just to watch my kid's face when she sees it the first time. So.
Apparently, my kids enjoy The Princess Bride. They watch it with their parents, so.
Well, I
at least we've done an okay job of raising them.
Yeah, I told you that story when the girls stayed home sick. One of them stayed home sick, and I made them watch The Iron Giant. And then the next time somebody stayed home sick, I made that one watch The Princess Bride. And both times, when the one who wasn't sick got home from school, they're like, Dad, and I watched this movie. You got to watch it. So, yes, I've totally twisted my kids' media consumption.
It's not like you're watching a lot of horror films or murder.
No, but I've definitely influenced my kids as far as their geekdom. So, and would do it again.
It's a shame you had them watch The Iron Giant.
Well, fuck you.
Nah, I honestly couldn't tell you the last time I watched that movie.
I can't tell you the last time I watched it, but I know that is one of those movies that even if you only watch it once, if you got to have no soul not to be enamored with it. You might not be a huge fan of the story, but the characters are at least compelling, and
is that Disney?
No. It's Brad Bird, the guy who directed Incredibles. That was his first movie. Which I think is what got him the job at Pixar to do Incredibles. Because it's definitely a, if you're a artist or animation geek, it's one of those movies that's on your list. So maybe it's just me, but my kids liked it.
It's just not a... Like I think part of the problem was when it came out.
Oh yeah, it was not well. It's definitely a sleeper kind of cult film.
Like 1999 is just I had other things on my mind.
It was the birth of the computer animated movies. You know, you had Toy Stories and all that kind of stuff coming out of where, and then you had this, you know, not Disney 2D animated cartoon. You know, not a lot of people ran out to the theaters to see it.
I was playing D&D and listening to Prodigy and
having kids.
Not actively. I had a kid at that point.
You were doing all the stuff that the Bible told you not to.
Yes, I was fighting with my kids.
Rebelling against the Lord.
I guess there's that.
I will say I've given a lot of thought to the story idea that I floated out last week about the post-apocalyptic world and the kind of people that it leaves behind and what kind of world that is and what it would be like to live in that fucking horrorscape. So.
Okay.
That's kind of been rotting in the back of my brain all week.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And I, for some reason, even though it's not my turn to DM, a map idea popped in my head. And I had to draw it. And next time I DM for our D&D stuff, you guys will have to suffer. My map idea.
Cool.
I mean, isn't it just a fancier version of what you did before?
Sort of, kinda.
It's just like the next step in that, like slightly better.
Yeah, kind of better conceived how to lay it out and to. Because before I just told you guys, I think just draw. What is it? 3x5 squares or something, and
something like that.
Yeah, that didn't really. There's a map and. You know, there are all these little floating things you can't jump between, and you're trying to get to the one platform or one of the platforms that lead to the bosses. You never know which one's going to take you there, unless you've been there before, and then you can map it.
Once you pop, you just can't stop.
Yeah. I did go see Dune yesterday. Me and Brad went and seen it here in Nashville. I really liked it, but I will agree the first one was, I think, a better story. What they had left in the second half of that story and the ways they, the decisions they made in telling it made it sometimes move way too fast, and it felt like it just skipped over a bunch of stuff. Because I get the book and the movie confused, because they kind of, I had seen the movie first and then read the book, so when I read the book I pictured it as the movie, so it kind of gets written in my head as both. But the sister is a character in the story. Paul's sister, Alicia Witt, I believe you're familiar.
I've never read the book. I've never watched a Dune movie.
Okay. She was the little red-haired girl that her mother becomes goes through the process to become a reverend mother while she's pregnant. So then when the child is born, it's born with all the powers of a reverend mother. So it's this scary little child.
But that's in the second book, right?
No, that's in the first movie. First book. In the movie, she wasn't born. In this movie, she wasn't born. But in the movie I saw before, she was born. 90%
sure that is...
She isn't born until later? Okay.
They may have, like, whatever movie you saw previously may have taken part of the second
book. Like I said, I've got them all jumbled up in my head.
I think I read the first book and then the next two after it, and then I went back and re-listened to the first book on tape.
Okay.
Because Dune is very much a thing that it's better to listen to somebody else pronounce everything.
Yeah, I need to do that.
Because there's a lot of weird words.
For
the audiobook was really good. So, like, he made it. It could have been a slog, and he made it very good. So,
cool.
It helped.
It just felt like, I think in the movie, the way they portrayed the time between the fall of the House Atreides and Paul's ascension to emperor, basically, is like years. It takes a length of time for him to really crush the Harkonnens and make the entire empire look at Arrakis and come there to solve this problem. But in this, it took like two battles, it seems like. Didn't seem like they could do that much damage in that short time.
I mean, I've resigned myself to the point that I'm just going to wait till it comes out, and I'm going to watch the first one and then the second one like the next day type of thing.
Yeah. I mean,
the first one and then find another 3.5 hours out of my day to drive to the theater and watch another thing. So.
Yeah. It looks great, and I like all the actors really kind of, you know, pulled their parts together. So it is definitely worth it. It's just,
yeah. I mean, it seems like you're definitely going to do a third one differently.
It's been a couple years since I read that book.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because at the end of the first book, they're hinting that she's going to have a kid and that it seems weird, I think. And then,
yeah, because it's talking to her while it's in the womb.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it turns into...
Maybe that's what I think. That's what I think. I thought it was like a character, like she was out. Maybe it's just the dialogue she has with her child while it's still in the womb.
Yeah. I mean, maybe...
The mythology of Frank Herbert is strange, but in an oddly appealing way. It's strange.
Yeah, it seemed like his style's changed a little bit over the years as he kept cranking out books.
Yeah. I just like the fact that it's supposed to be our world thousands of years in the future and basically just exaggerating all the plausible mistakes we could be making.
Yeah, but do you really think if we survive that long that we're not going to be making the same stupid mistakes?
Oh, we will. You think we won't have religion rule in everybody's life and corporations or houses, whatever you want to call them, owning everything and everyone basically working towards whatever their ends are? Yes.
Yeah, we'll get absolutely there soon enough. We don't even need thousands of years.
I mean, we're already starting to see some of the banana shit from like Max Berry's Jennifer government and the way corporations kind of like banded together to kind of not make like super corps, but like they, you know, instead of like, you know, Pepsi owns KFC and mm-hmm. whatnot, but this
and Taco Bell and Pizza Hut.
Right. But this is more like, okay, well, you know, if you're part of the team Pepsi, then you're also like, you get your gas from BP and things like that. Like, we're starting to see that kind of cross promotion show up in.
Oh, so yeah. If you buy it from here, you'll get a break. Yeah. If you buy this from here. Yeah.
And it's getting to a point now, like here in Mansfield, if you have a Kroger Plus card, there's now like 15 places around Kroger on Lex Ave that all now give you something for having a Kroger Plus card. It's just the level of like attempting to build a interconnected micro economy is just kind of gross.
Also, all the money, all the pennies go into the same billionaire's pocket.
Right. Just.
That's all it is if this human spends money, I want it to go to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's why I don't have the McDonald's app.
Right.
I mean, I'll probably eventually get it, but I haven't yet. The problem is they always get those. It's just like how Temu was and everything else. Like it's the first year is great. It's a bunch of discounts and actual stuff. And then they start backing it up to the point where it's like not even worth having a card to begin with, but they've already got all your information.
Right.
Yeah. It's the record club kind of bullshit.
Right. Like instead of getting a discount.
They're going to keep pounding you. Yeah.
Keep your price the same and raise everybody else's price.
I can't stand Temu just because their YouTube commercial is shop like a billionaire, feel like a billionaire. And I'm like, I don't want to feel like a billionaire.
Yeah. But they burnt through their Amazon phase real quick and they're already back up to fully just evil Amazon in less than 2 years.
Yep.
It is funny how much stuff I see on Amazon now that it's like, oh, this is just Temu crap. But on Amazon for three times the price.
Yeah, I know, right?
It makes me stop buy a lot of stuff from Amazon because if it was that cheap, you'd know it's crap. Everything I've been watching has been on Apple TV, so nobody cares.
Okay. Well, tell us about it. Sell us on Apple TV.
I got sucked into the whole World War II, like, whatever. Like, the trilogy of the Band of Brothers, and then they did The Pacific, which was not as good, obviously. And then they were currently wrapping up Masters of the Air, which is like the 100th Air Wing that was doing the bombing raids.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all Spielberg and Tom Hanks like productions.
Yeah.
But it basically just covered the European War, the Aerial War, and the Pacific War as like a World War II trilogy. So wrapped up all those and like the accompanying, like, here's all the old people giving testimony about how it actually was. And it's funny because the they're interesting that the Air one that they just did, kind of all of them, but like especially the Air one, it was real people that they were basically just playing out their stories. Like stuff that actually happened. They didn't have to go make up a bunch of crazy things. Like enough crazy shit happened that they just had to retell it all. Because like the accompanying documentary was like, they must have sat down in the 90s and like early 2000s because a lot of this footage is like old, but they sat down with a bunch of the World War II guys all around the same time and just filmed a bunch. And like seen it afterwards, it's like, oh, that was that story. Oh, that was that story. It's like, oh, it happened exactly like that. Like they didn't even have to exaggerate because it really was just a good enough story on its own. So it was cool to see that at the end of it. And they didn't have to make up a bunch of random stuff. It was all just true stories.
That's cool.
I was watching Constellation, which Chad might like, but it's still very much whether or not it's going to be good. Like, really? There's an accident with, they're doing like a science experiment on the International Space Station, and there's an accident, and one of the people dies, and so, like, everybody has to abandon the space station. But, like, it's the, like, particles that can be in two places at one time type of thing.
Okay.
From physics, and then that was the experiment they were trying to do, and so the whole thing is... there's an alternate universe where the woman dies and not the dude, and like she got sent back to the wrong one, and so it's going back and forth, and like she's trying to figure out, like, because her family's all there, but like her kid knew Swedish and the other kid does not know Swedish at all, like barely, like she's still a Swedish and her husband's like English, but like her kid barely knows Swedish and the other one and a bunch of other stuff. And so they're going back and forth with, there's one other astronaut that knows about that because he lost his crew in one of the timelines. And like, basically people that like the, I don't know if you ever heard that like the cosmonauts, they set up several failed missions is what people are saying.
Yeah.
Because the like, ham radio operators were able to pick up stuff from the flights while they were doing it, and they picked up several ones that were astronauts radioing back that were not on some kind of like listed flight.
Really?
Basically, there was one, I don't know if it's well known, I don't know if it's, you know, proven fake or whatever, but the one thing that they claim was, I think it was some Italian brothers or some, there were several people, but the Italian brothers were the ones that had the recording of a female cosmonaut saying like, it's really hot, the world's upside down, and like basically she died in space and they just didn't report it that she flew.
They still say only like 13 people died at Chernobyl, so
well, yeah, but this was not even like, oh, there was an accident in space but she made it bad. There was like, no, that mission didn't exist. And people still say that they've accounted for all the missions once all the records fell from the Soviet Union, but I don't know. But they have audio of this and they say like, it sounds like that's what it is. But in the one world, she got hit, and when they went to check and see what it was a female cosmonaut's body just floating in space,
like
desiccated. And then when they flip back over, the lady that's running the space city for the European Space Federation is that woman. Who was supposedly, you know, the one that died. So, I mean, it's like an interesting, like, well, what would it be like? And also, they can play with the alternate world where NASA's slightly different and the cosmonauts are slightly different. And I don't know. It's been interesting.
Sounds like
it's like episode 7, and they could very well just screw this whole thing up. So...
yeah. Oh, yeah.
No guarantees yet. But so far, pretty good.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Athena and I watched a 3-part miniseries documentary on Hulu called Quiet on Set.
Oh. Yeah, I've been hearing about this.
Yeah. Wow.
I knew some of it was real bad back in the day, but...
yes, but there is a bombshell that gets dropped in this that has never been dropped before.
What is it about?
It's the horribleness of behind the scenes at Nickelodeon. Schneider and...
all the kids shows?
Yes.
Arlie's and shit? Okay.
Yes.
So what was this bombshell?
So it is common knowledge that on the Nickelodeon show All That, there was a dialogue coach. I cannot remember his name. I'm not going to try and remember. He was arrested towards the end of the show for... he was arrested, tried, and convicted of essentially being a pedophile.
Okay.
But because it was a kid, the kid identity was... you know, John Doe in all the court documents. And the kid actually comes out and speaks about as publicly as you could without, like, going into just vomit-inducing detail.
Sure.
About what happened.
Okay.
And that child actor was Drake Bell.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he wasn't named before, but, like, the guy was known.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, that was the thing, because it's spilling over into other stuff, because I'm not caught up completely, but I know that, like, the Pod Meets World podcast that I listened to had to do a thing because two of the people were friends with the guy, and he just kept on, like, giving them not the real story.
Yep.
So they're on the list of people that wrote, like, letters of support back in the 90s when he was arrested. And
yeah.
It's become a big thing. It's kind of like the whole Danny Masterson thing. Of,
yeah.
Like, here's all the people that wrote letters of support, and, like, what did they know, and how terrible of people are they?
You know, right.
Comparatively. So that's been going around a lot of different spheres that I am interested in since it came out.
Yeah. I knew those shows. My kids enjoyed Drake and Josh and iCarly and Victorious.
Daughters ate all that stuff up. Yeah.
I mean, we watched that, and that was before we even had kids. It was just like,
it was good TV,
mindless TV to watch. Like, it always had funny, like, adult type jokes in there as well.
Well,
I think Aaron too adult, liked
Hannah
Montana as much as the girls did. So, I mean, different studio, yes, but same genre,
right?
But yeah, the parts in, like, it presented you with this mildly ethical dilemma, because the entire thing is talking about just how awful of a human being Dan Schneider was.
Right.
But
he had a factory going. He didn't really care crap about the kids.
Well, but when it came time and they were talking about everything that happened with Drake, and, you know, Drake is sitting there talking about this, and they're asking him questions about, like, you know, who from Nickelodeon reached out to you? Who did, you know, who was there to, you know, talk to you about this? And he said, honestly, the only person, you know, at work that gave a shit was Dan.
Sometimes the page just needs to be filled.
Was that his own ass, or?
No. Dan, like, legitimately felt awful. Dan Schneider was apparently just a racist misogynist.
He wasn't, like, touching the kids?
No, he did kind of insert some pretty terrible jokes, but, like, it was terrible, inappropriate stuff. It was never like, oh, you know, I'm out here perving on kids.
Well, he had the whole feet thing that was
an
ongoing thing for a while. I don't know if they cover any part of that, but
they do. They talk about it. Like, yes, there are some things that are kind of weird, kind of gross, but nothing like, no arrestable offenses.
Sure.
We'll call it. But then
being a terrible human is not really a crime.
Right. But, you know, when they're talking about the aftermath of everything that happened with Drake, like, this terrible human, like, this was the one time where this terrible human actually wasn't a terrible human. So you're kind of like, you're going through, and they framed it. They told the story incredibly well, because you spend, like, 2 hours just prepping yourself to hate Dan Schneider for the rest of your life, and then for the next, like, hour, you're kind of like questioning all of that, because here was this guy who, you know, he was basically the only Nickelodeon exec that gave a shit.
Well, at the same time, like, not everybody's all terrible, and a lot of people that are terrible for a reason.
Right.
Does something else happen to them? Like, does it mean what they're doing is right, but it also doesn't mean that, like, that came out of nowhere and just surprised everyone? Like,
right. Like, it, looking back at it, and like, okay, Dan was a terrible person, and it's no surprise that, like, his, the people that he surrounded himself with were even worse. I guess, like, that, it's just, it was so, God, it was so weird to see everything and how they talked about it. And they, at the very end, they kind of talk about the fact that McCurdy was kind of missing from a lot of the lifetime achievement stuff.
Lifetime achievement for who?
For Dan Schneider. Like, right before... Right before Me Too, he was given a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Kids' Choice Awards.
Oh, ew.
Yeah.
I mean, he made so much money for Nickelodeon, so
right.
I can't see that, but like...
Right. Oof. But yeah, Jeanette McCurdy was not there.
Right.
I do want to get her book.
What the... Yeah, I hate... I hate mom book.
The yeah, I'm glad my mom died.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh,
apparently my wife ordered it.
Oh, okay. Was Snyder the one that knocked up Jamie Lynn Spears?
No.
Who was that?
I
there was some other like Snyder type executive that was I thought the problem there. I don't know.
Look,
none of them were great.
No. Pretty awful situation. Fascinating documentary, though. I highly recommend it. I do not recommend watching it with kids. While they do a great job of skirting the issues, I mean, not skirting, but like skirting the language.
Sure.
It is definitely some heavy subject matter.
Yeah.
Throughout.
Yeah, there's a lot of 90s and early 2000s stars that just did not have a good time on their shows.
No. For
any number of reasons, but yeah. There's several documentaries I'm sure they could make about all the different networks.
Definitely. I mean, and I think I hope that we find out the truth about some of those. Not because I'm thinking about it voyeuristically, but because I think there is some some history lessons that are best taught when everything's out in the open and names are named. You know, it's not like, well, you know, kind of this person sort of just fucking go through it and name them and be done with it.
Yeah. I feel like there's enough stuff now that there's a lot more of these that are not so much like a, as soon as it's an open secret, it's already getting posted about, like,
right.
They're wiping them out a little bit quicker than they used to be.
Yep. Which is good. I mean, being a terrible person shouldn't be swept under the rug just because you're great at something.
Well, let's not get into sports then.
Listen, I wholeheartedly admit that my favorite team had a guy on the field who was a Hall of Fame player who was involved in someone dying, murdered.
Great at murder.
I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers employed a quarterback who's a Hall of Famer who more than likely raped a woman in a bar.
Yep.
We haven't even started talking about the super awesome boys club that is the Cleveland Browns quarterback room right now.
I mean, at least the backup only stole crab legs.
Yeah, but he also faced a lot of rape allegations in college.
Okay. I was not aware of that, but
yes,
that was still at the tail end of push everything under the rug time for allegations in college. That's why everybody was trying to get out right at three.
Jameis the rapist was a common thing to hear.
Do you think I heard some stuff about that at the like articles about it at the beginning of when he got drafted?
Yeah. Yeah, they did a really good job of keeping that under wraps about as long as they could. And then as like his senior year wore on and he just did some real dumb things his senior year. It became really hard for his antics to go unnoticed.
Yeah, like these were like springtime pre-draft articles that I was reading it in. Like,
yeah.
It was before he actually was drafted, but after he was done playing college.
Right.
Well. Yeah, I can't say that it's probably gotten too much better. They're just hoping to get paid before it all comes out now.
Pretty much.
A little quicker.
Yep. Yeah, it's kind of depressing.
So any non-allegations?
Any non-allegations?
I'm just saying, like, anything that's not an allegation against somebody.
Oh. Anybody playing any good video games?
I'm playing baseball because it just came out Friday.
Is that 24?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I couldn't remember. Couldn't remember how they numbered theirs.
Yeah, baseball's nice because it's all within the same season. So
yeah.
Same year.
Depends what you consider good.
I mean, I decided I had enough of the bullshit endgame on Diablo 4, so I'm essentially playing a character that will never be able to do anything serious endgame.
Okay.
So, I'm having a blast.
Were you playing a warlock or necromancer?
I am. With the most utterly batshit goofy build you will ever see.
Full melee only. Necromancer. No skeletons.
No, I am using all the minions. I am my own jury walking around. With the Sensical, I am at 12 total.
I opened it up. I played, I think I got 3 levels on my Sorcerer. Of course, that was like level 22 to 25. So,
yeah.
And then I was like, okay, yeah. I'd rather watch some short. I found a skit show on Amazon with Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
Called Con Man.
Yeah.
Did you watch that?
I did.
The part when he answers the door and she's dressed like him, I laughed for a full 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was that was so ridiculous, but so perfect.
I agree.
I lost my shit.
I agree.
But yeah, that was a very strange show. I don't know. When I started watching it, it took me a couple before I realized it's all about him going to conventions, not being a con man.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand the premise.
Is that the one that has
all the characters from all his shows? Yeah.
Battlestar
Galactica girl with the doll.
Yeah.
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 Nathan Fillion play. They all play characters, but on something other than Firefly. But Firefly is really a thing because the guy who played the doctor is on there, and he calls it Serenity. He's like, no, Serenity was the movie. Firefly was the show.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was weird, but
I enjoyed it.
Funny. It was funny. And it was nice and short. You know, the episodes were like, 15, 20 minutes long.
Something like that, yeah. Has anybody been watching Resident Alien Season 3?
I don't have cable in my room, so... Yeah, no.
I think I'm 2 weeks behind.
Okay.
Karen is going on vacation with Elizabeth next week. I am staying home. So I may see if it's on demand.
I know it is on Hulu.
But you have to pay for Hulu for it to be on Hulu.
Right.
I have Hulu through Disney, so I don't know if I get it.
Yeah,
good. I don't think there's an extra pay beyond that. Like the Disney thing is still that version.
Well, let's look. I don't know if. I mean, it might be one of those
Hulu Live or something, right?
I do have Hulu Live. But...
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. I didn't think it was on.
I mean, it always pops up on like the main page for me, and they don't normally do that for stuff you have to upgrade to, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I have my Hulu and my Disney bundle, but I still have Hulu Live.
Right. You can always pay more to get the upgrades, yeah. But like the base part of the Disney thing, I think includes all the TV show stuff. They just may have like some commercials.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the live stuff, but it has like the next day.
Right. Yeah. I don't know who owns Sci-Fi, so that's going to be
NBC Universal.
Oh, does it? Okay.
So
Peacock.
It's either on Hulu or Peacock. And it's kind of a toss-up because some of the stuff that they have kind of said, I don't know if we want to put that on Peacock because of they're really weird about like.
Wait, which program are we talking about?
Resident Alien.
It's on Peacock.
Is it on Peacock?
It's on Peacock.
Yeah, it's not on Hulu. Okay. It's on Netflix streaming the first two seasons. But
yeah, that's why it's also popping up there for me too.
I watch it on Hulu on demand.
It's on Hulu as well.
But that might be part of the Hulu Live. So, but I mean, Peacock is in comparison to the other streaming services, Peacock is cheap and worth it.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to lose one or two more of these, probably to like mergers, but there's still a few too many streaming services.
I agree. And I think one of the ones that is going to need to do something is Netflix. I mean, they've got a couple of cash cows in terms of series, but you know, Stranger Things has one more season,
right? And that's 2025, not even this year,
right? Umbrella Academy, I think they said, has one more season.
It does.
Yeah, I think that's done. Is it?
One more comes out, I believe, this year.
Yeah, oh, okay. And then that's it. I mean, what else do they have right now?
They have some little shows like Heartstoppers and those kind of shows.
Right, but are those shows that you can charge as much as Netflix charges?
No.
I mean, they must have made some kind of deal because they've been picking up more of the Korean stuff. So I could see them trying to get that market.
I don't watch.
I don't know what else is out there.
If it's subtitles, I can't watch that and draw. So.
Oh.
I did watch the second season of Tourist. I did like that.
There's a second season of The Tourist?
Already, yeah.
What?
Did it come out earlier and it was just like putting it back up there because of something, or was
it? No, the first season came out and then it was like a month or two later the second season came out.
Okay. It really was that weird. All right.
Yeah.
Then I'll go watch it.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
I mean, outside of the shows that I just mentioned, the only stuff I really watch on Netflix is stand-up comedians and like cooking shows.
Well, they got. Are they going to do another season of Sandman?
It says more episodes are coming. So yeah, that probably means not a whole season.
Yeah. And then, yeah, One Piece and.
Don't care.
It was fun enough to watch, but it's not something I'm going to go through months of not watching anything on Netflix to get to.
Right.
I mean, that's where we're rewatching Avatar and things like that. Like,
yeah,
there's enough stuff on Netflix that we're not gonna drop it. But
I mean, I'm kind of getting to the point where I'm like, yeah, I just don't know if it's worth it. Like, with some of the add-ons that you can get with other streaming services that would still make that streaming service cheaper than Netflix. Like, I can get, I would miss one show and I can't imagine it's going to be around much longer anyways. So.
Yeah, we're just, I don't remember, we stopped one of them, but.
Well, streaming services have been become the new cable anyway, so.
Kinda.
Right.
Well, you know, they're just expensive and just as a pain in the ass to get what you want, so.
Yeah. It is funny because that was the whole thing where everybody was like, oh, but why can't I just get what I want? And it's like, cool. Go individually buy all the crap that you want and see where you're at. And now they're right back at that. All those people that complained to me 15 years ago on the phone. Fuck you.
I mean, here's the thing. It's not so much that I wanted to pick and choose. It's that I didn't want to be required to buy some things just because I wanted cable.
Right. But they're also required to carry it. It wasn't like they got to stick you with it. It was companies that were sticking you with it.
Like, I dropped YouTube TV because YouTube TV signed the Viacom deal and decided that because they wanted to offer the Viacom channels, my YouTube TV subscription needed to go up $15 a month.
Yeah.
I didn't want the Viacom channels. So fine, fuck you. I'll just take my business elsewhere.
And I'm sure the Viacom deal would not have let them break that onto a Viacom package.
Right.
So that's how they sign those deals.
Right. But like, they need to start, and I think we're slowly going to be getting to a point where this is going to be the way that you're going to do business in the future. You're going to pick like packages I really like Sling, right? Is it Sling that has the two different tiers, the blue and the red, or you can get both?
I have no idea.
I think it's Sling. I don't know. Anyway, they had a really great package price or package deals. The problem is I could have lived with the blue package. My wife could have lived with the red package. To live together, we would need both. Getting both packages meant that it was no cheaper.
Sure.
So...
Oh, is that how they did it? They divided it up, like, here's all the documentaries and home stuff and this and that and whatever, and then here's all the other stuff. And
Yep.
They're just trying to get people that live with roommates or anybody else where you have to buy two.
Yeah. Like, if you bought one, they were, like, $34.99. But if, or no, it was $49.99 for one, which is a good deal. That's cheaper than cable. Cool. Or $79.99 for both. Well, now it's the same price as cable.
Right.
Cool. I don't want this.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of in that weird spot where we've run out of infinite things to grow. Like, everybody got all that pandemic money,
right?
Because everybody was at home. And so they were like, cool, we need to order all these shows and hire all these people and start doing this, that, and whatever. Yep. And then pandemic died down right around the same time. There was the writer's strike and the actor's strike. And they're like, hey, we've got a huge glut of things that we can't catch up on. So basically two shutdowns in the last 4.5 years have kind of put everybody behind on a lot of things.
Yep.
And a lot of it's not actually going through. So the 5 years from now, how big of a gap there is in content to make up for all the interruptions here.
It's definitely going to be interesting.
It's like, I don't know that people are doing that great right now. Like, quality stuff they're putting out. Like, I don't know. I'd like to see percentages of, like, what's highly rated versus, you know, above and below 50, 60% ratings.
Right.
Compared to previous, you know, 5-year periods. Because there's always going to be some crap or, like, the real, you know, like the sci-fi does those movies where you know what you're getting. It's not trying to win an Oscar. It's just a weird monster movie.
Right.
There's always going to be those. But of the stuff where they were trying to make it, you know, everybody likes it type of thing, how bad the ratings are compared, because it's just gone off a cliff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it could be just as bad always, and I don't know the difference.
Maybe.
I've run out of TV.
You've run out of TV?
No, I mean, I don't have any other TV to talk about.
Oh, okay.
We had an election that didn't matter on Tuesday, yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't matter for the Democrat side.
It didn't really matter for the Republicans.
I mean, they didn't even run people on most of the things.
Like, they didn't try to sneak anything by anybody?
Not really.
No, not on this one. Everything there was to vote was, like, there was the Senate race for the Republicans. And almost everything else on both sides of the ballot was either one person or nobody was qualified.
Yep.
And I think I will give them this, at least the Democrat ballot had somebody in every slot.
Really?
Even like prosecutor and coroner and some of the other stuff where other years, like Democrats had 4 or 5 different things that were just nobody qualified.
Yeah, we in Mansfield, Richland County, there was no Democrat for sheriff.
Okay.
There was no Democrat for like 4 or 5 things.
The one candidate though on the Republican side has had me plan the pre-sequel.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. What does this mean?
Which candidate?
The sheriff's candidate.
Oh, his name Palpatine or something?
No.
It's mayor for sheriff. And as everyone will remember from the pre-sequel, the Mariff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Bravo, sir. Bravo.
Deep cut. Okay. Moving on. Lost me on that one.
Borderlands, the pre-sequel?
I did not play it.
I was going to ask if it was a Borderlands thing, because like it's starting to sound like one, but I did not play the pre-sequel. I started in 3 with you guys, so.
Yeah, I started playing the pre-sequel because I bought the Handsome Jack collection, which had everything, but...
I mean, pre-sequel is my second favorite Borderlands game.
Kind of same.
It's like the one with a decent story, but no end game.
Correct.
Yeah.
But the story is so good. I played it. I had 3 max level operatives. 2 max level claptraps and 1 of the others for all the classes,
including the DLCs.
Yes. Yes, because, well, let me double check. Claptrap was DLC or was he base?
Claptrap was base. DLC was Clone and Baroness.
I don't know if I actually got Baroness to max. That might have been the only one I didn't get. Let me look here. Okay, so... playable characters. Okay. Definitely had Athena. I had 2 Athena. I had multiple Wilhelms, claptraps. Wait, what? This list is stupid. What the fuck list is this? Okay. I don't know. Find me. Jesus Christ.
Okay.
They're mixing Borderlands 2 and 3, and I'm like, wait, I had that character at max level, but that's not pre-sequel. I don't know. I spent a lot of time on the game. Yes, bless you.
I came across I fell into a YouTube video hole, but it was a bunch of documentaries about a man named Carl Barks, who...
Your
communist dog? No. He was the artist on Disney's Donald Duck comic book and is widely considered the inspiration to... He's like the D&D of comic books. Like all these creators came about, you know, and sowed their oats in D&D. This is what brought on their imagination. For comic creators and
even the guy who like invented manga.
Okay.
This guy was his inspiration.
Huh.
He wrote the guy who created manga, I don't know his name, I'm sorry. He had an American friend during, when American servicemen were over there. He had an American soldier friend who introduced him to these comics. And he loved them and started imitating, the art and composition, and then kind of made his love for comics. And then, he spurred his own style from that. But some historians were like, well, what comics was he fucking reading? And he wasn't into superhero comics. And they look back, that time, and they tore through like this guy's records and stuff and found the books that he was reading. And it was Donald Duck by Disney. Hmm. And for the longest time, the artist was unnamed. For a very long time, he was unnamed. Because there was the culture of Disney was Walt Disney draws those. And they didn't want readers to think anything other than Walt Disney drew those. So if it wasn't Walt Disney drawing them, the artist was not credited. But it was like the late or early 90s. Someone had... this is after, obviously after Walt Disney was dead, and many years later, they're like, hey, wanted to get in contact with this artist, and they finally got a name for this man, and they chased him down. And he grew up in like rural California on a farm. Mom died. He had help in the farm, so he quit school. But he always loved drawing, and he chased his career all over. He went to Canada for some magazine and worked up there. And then he took a chance going down working for Disney because they were looking for artists to do their comics. And eventually he moved out into the desert because it was better for his health or something. And he was doing the Donald Duck comic for years. He's the guy who created Duckville. He created the Beagle Boys. He created Scrooge McDuck and the Money Bin and all these things that we associate with that little universe of Donald Duck and the Huey, Dewey, and Louie characters from DuckTales and all that stuff. Everything it pulled from, he created. He's kind of the Bill Finger of Donald Duck. Bill Finger, creator of Batman. But he was, for the longest time, he was just referred to as the good duck artist because no one knew who he was. He never, and he, being that Disney wanted everyone to think it was Walt Disney drawing them, people would write in and say, we love this comic, who is the artist, blah, 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 and they won. And the only bit of, like, fan mail he had gotten was this man who eventually found out his name, a fan letter from him, and Disney had forwarded him one complaint that somebody had about the comic back in, the 60s.
Huh.
But I'm like... Because he worked in isolation, he had no idea what people thought of it or what. And he was an avid reader of National Geographic. So he had all these National Geographics that showed all these exotic places. So Donald Duck and Huey, Dewey, and Louie would go on a pirate adventure and he would find these locations in these magazines, and he would do these beautiful, comics and. It was just so varied and so rich with just unfiltered imagination, because at some point he kept turning in pages and Disney just let him write it and draw it. So he just was left to his own to do it. But it was just a really interesting story. And I kind of found, you know, be it ego or what, I found some parallels in it. he didn't hear any of the criticism or the accolades. So he just did what he wanted for himself. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of like what I do for my comic. So, but it was really kind of inspiring, his story. He died in 2000. He was born in 1901. But he's a sweet old guy who, you know, basically had a elementary school education and a love for drawing and basically dreaming up these this little universe around Donald Duck. And he did it for 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But now they've all this culture has come out after, you know, after his death, and after he had a short period of what in the late 90s where people knew who he was, and he was kind of retired, but he was thinking about going back to work because he needed to help his wife, you know, make ends meet. And once his name got out there to the fans, people had contacted him to do oil paintings of the ducks.
Huh.
So there are, like, you know, for real, huge, you know, oil paintings, like a recreation of some of the duck covers, or like Scrooge McDuck jumping into the money bin kind of thing. You know, just full beautiful paintings that people commissioned him to do. And, you know, he spent the latter part of his life, you know, that this is what he did. And he was like, I was happy to do it. It was, you know, employment. And he loved, you know, he was pretty good at painting because his wife is a painter. And yeah, it's just weird.
Hmm. It's strange. Weird is his wife, like trying to be a serious artist all the time. She's like, oh, so I was just painting fucking ducks.
No, she was a serious artist, but they didn't really go into, this was like his third wife, because like he took these jobs to basically wherever he saw opportunities to chase his dream to be a illustrator, to do cartoons. He didn't really want to do animation. He wanted to do cartoons like in the newspaper or the magazines or what. So he took a job doing them in San Francisco, and then he went from there to somewhere in Canada for some magazine. I can't remember the name of it. They worked there for a long time, and eventually he became like kind of the boss there of the cartoon and the illustration department. And then he heard a call from Burbank about Disney, and he kind of just uprooted his whole life to chase that dream. And, you know, he just took risks, basically, it sounds like, and he ended up where he was supposed to be. But, yeah, it's weird to hear that this guy had all these admirers and influenced all these people, and he had no idea what was going on until years after he had stopped doing that. But now they publish those all his comics in like hardbound color pages of the Donald Duck, and it has his name on the cover, and you can buy, there's like 6 or 7 volumes of these Donald Duck comics. But yeah, it was really interesting. And then I found one video, and then it took me to another video and another video. And I watched like 3 or 4 videos, you know, just one was the kind of search for this guy and the story of how they found him and who he influenced. And then at the end, who he was. And then one was kind of an interview, straight up interview with him. And he had never traveled. He'd always, you know, kind of lived vicariously through the ducks, because they went to all these places that he really didn't go, but he wanted to. And finally he went over to, he was like 94 years old. He went to Japan, and it was just met by this wave of fandom.
for him. It was just kind of wild.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I had never heard the story of, you know, the good duck artist. Yeah, that was way before my time. But yeah, watching it was very interesting.
I mean, I will say, so at my first e-commerce job, when I was selling the comics, the golden age, the, you know, 50s, 60s era Disney shit, like the audience for that was always way bigger than like the,
there's more than seven books, by the way. I'm looking at them now. There's dozens.
Okay.
But they're like anywhere from $35 to $70 a pop.
Wow.
At least hardbound books, depending on the volume.
Yeah, the Disney shit, always just tons of people bidding on it. It was kind of crazy. You know, they may not have been, you know, because we would, when we bought big collections of stuff and, you know, there was the golden age stuff, we would try and, you know, the romance stuff together, the Disney stuff together, the Western stuff together. The Western stuff usually went for the highest dollar amount, but it wasn't like, that isn't what ended up having the most bidders fighting over it. It was always more fun to watch the Disney lots, because they wouldn't go for as much. But, you know, a Western lot of comics maybe had 20 bids total over the course of 10 days. The fucking Disney shit, man, there would be hundreds of bids.
Just old comics?
Yeah, yeah, just late 40s through early 60s Disney comics.
Yeah, that there's a lot of fans, I guess. That was just really, really interesting to see, hear about all that kind of behind the scenes. He really didn't have like the, and he said, I was kind of glad I had that isolation because I wasn't prone, or I wasn't driven to like draw what the people wanted, or what, yeah, not draw what people didn't like. I just drew whatever fit my story that I came up with that month. But I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, Disney's got so many different types of fans, like between the animation and the live action and the music and all the other stuff. Like,
yeah,
there can be entire silos of just Disney fans that don't even interact with the other Disney fans because they're just a slightly different fandom.
Yeah, their weirdness is just a little different than the other ones.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I always loved DuckTales and all. I mean, I remember watching those cartoons. I think all of us remember those.
Mm-hmm.
DuckTales, woo! yeah, it was just
Jesus Christ.
It was just a fun YouTube rabbit hole to fall down. So,
I think I'm getting DuckTales and Chippendales Rescue Rangers confused.
Could be,
yeah. Same era of television, but
yeah.
Yeah. DuckTales had Gizmo Duck and all those. Uncle Scrooge.
Is that Baloo driving the plane?
Yes, Rescue Rangers was Baloo and Chip and Dale Rescue. No, that was Tailspin. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, Tailspin.
Tailspin, yeah. Holy shit.
That was the one.
That's the one you're thinking of.
Pick it up with that. Okay.
Darkwing Duck was its own. I think it derived from DuckTales, but became its own thing.
Okay. Yeah, I knew Darkwing Duck. Tailspin was the one that I'm thinking of when I always think of
Flying
the plane and whatnot.
Yeah.
That was the Jungle Book origin cartoon. Pernate.
Wait, the Jungle Book origin cartoon?
Yeah, Baloo. That's where Baloo come from. Mogwai and Jungle Book. It was all the characters. Tailspin was all the characters from there in a show. So it had King Louie, the orangutan guy, and Blue. And then they had the characters that were made for this series. But, yeah, that's what Tailspin, well, where the main character came from. And then Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers from Chip and Dale comics and Darkwing Duck was from Duckville.
Ooh.
Yeah. With DuckTales.
Ducks and Dune and just all kinds of things.
Ducks and Dune and Damsel. It was the Triple D episode.
Yeah. Crazy. Like, you talk about the DuckTales stuff. I'm sure I watched it when I was a kid. I don't remember it.
I remember it, and I was way too old for it, I'm sure. I weren't doing drugs. I was doing cartoons.
I don't remember DuckTales, and I know for a fact I never watched or read Dune. Like, I was aware that it existed.
Your parents would not have been a fan of Dune. Star Trek fan mom would not have liked Dune.
Probably not.
Yeah, it had a strong religious opinion. How's that?
Okay.
It does not paint religion in a good light. The Penny Jesuit basically came to Arrakis and sowed these myths into the people, and then when in the future Paul and his family come there and certain things line up with the myths that they had sown there, these people think it's the Messiah coming, and it's just circumstance. It's all because they've paved the way for their Kwisatz Haderach, their perfectly bred human being, to step into that myth and take over the worshippers. So.
Yeah.
In the desert, no less. So, you know.
In the desert, yeah.
Played by a very white actor. I mean, it's basically just the Bible.
Yeah, it's just the Bible.
And you're saying that this was...
Name something that isn't in the Bible, but a lot of people think is in the Bible.
Our world in the future?
Yes, Dune is year... The story of Dune takes place in the year... That's 10,000 something. 10,191. It's basically 20,000 years into our future.
18,000?
I don't know.
10,191?
Dune is set in the year 10,191, which is actually about 20,000 years into the future. I don't know if this person knows how to do math. But yeah, that's when it's supposed to take place.
Okay.
There was some other event that they are using to.
I think I think there is a AD, like, you know, BC
AD. 10,000 years, here's where we could leave the planet now.
Yeah. I think it was actually the end of the Machine Wars.
I'll pretend I know what that means. Okay.
The year is roughly calculated from the time in which humanity overthrew and destroyed all the human-made intelligent machines like robots and computers.
Huh.
Because that's one of the...
We just got to deal with that for 8,000 years.
That's one of the laws that's in the Orange Catholic Bible, which is something in the story, Dune, that says you shall not create a machine liking to a human mind.
Huh.
Basically, you're not allowed to make something that can think for itself, because we've already fought that war.
Okay.
And so they have certain people in this universe. They're called Mentats. They're basically bred from birth to do huge calculations in their mind. They are basically living computers. And they took the place of the need for anything that would simulate the human mind.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a big boogeyman, the thinking robots.
Yeah, generally is.
Well, it's either they're our friends or they're our enemies. And depending on what kind of fantasy you want to write, you got to choose where you want to put them. Good or bad. I lost the D20. And I need to find it because it was the one that was always good to me. I'm stuck with these other ones that are just fucking evil.
Maybe if you didn't treat them poorly, they wouldn't be evil.
I don't treat them poorly. I roll them on a nice table or in this nice little velvet-lined box.
Have you guys seen anything on the Critical Role beta?
Daggerheart?
Yes.
I saw enough of it to know that I'm not willing to try it just yet. It seems so. You have a D20 to decide combat stuff.
No.
But everything, yes.
No.
They have 2D6 or 2D12 to decide actions and anything. To hit is still decided by D20.
No.
What's it decided by then?
2D12s.
No.
Glad we can argue about this.
It was one of the video I watched. It was one of the things that the person was pointing out that they didn't understand why not just make it all 2D12. They went on at length about it. So I don't know if it's changed since then or what, but
I watched their 4-hour one shot.
The character creation thing or?
No, I watched the character creation thing as well. Like I the system seems interesting to me. It's not.
I don't know why. It seems like they're creating an avenue to which they can sell me a bunch of stuff. Like
how business works, Ray.
Well, you have.
Put out their core book and just said that's good enough.
You can't just have 2D12. You have to have 2D12 that are different colors or certain colors. Because one is your fear and one is your hope.
Yes.
And depending on which number is higher depends on how that happens. And if you roll two ones, that's a critical. Doesn't matter because they were the same. So two ones, two twos, two twelves. That's a critical. But then you have, when you go up a level, you don't, it isn't just like kind of set, like when I become level 4, I get this. It's every time you go up a level, you make choices. You kind of pick. It's kind of a talent tree type thing. But the way they do the talent tree, it was like cards that you print and cut out of the book that you can download for free off their website. But that just seems like something they're going to try to sell me later. And from what the demo I watched was basically somebody reviewing the game. And I kind of agree with his one assessment is this is something that if you're going to play it, you better have a big table because each player needs this area to lay out all their shit. It isn't just a piece like of paper.
That much.
Well, that and you, when you roll those two D12, if you gain fear, oh no, when you roll and it's fear, the DM gains something, and when it's hope, you gain something.
Yes.
And if it's fear, you also lose something, I think. So you're constantly...
It's a liquid resource that's constantly replenished. And yes, when you roll with fear, then the DM immediately, like if you're in combat with the DM and you roll with fear, they immediately get to go.
There's basically parts of your character sheet that if you're not doing it on PDF or something, you're going to want to laminate that part of the character sheet because you erase and rewrite that number a lot. I don't know. It seemed very cumbersome. Or not a lot of
dials to be able to track it, so you wouldn't have to keep erasing.
Yeah, there's always that.
Dials, tokens, dice, a variety. Hardbound. Yeah.
Whatever. It seemed very cumbersome for a little forward movement for all that extra work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You don't gain a lot for a lot more bookkeeping.
There were a lot. I didn't think there was a lot of bookkeeping. There were a lot of pieces, though.
Yeah, I'm not completely sold on it, but I haven't watched Critical Role in a while. I'm just wondering if this is where they're going to move all their stuff because the way they presented it, they're definitely presenting it as a you can transfer your 5e character right into this, and here's how.
Well, okay. So they did their character creation session zero and then a one shot that had breadcrumbs at the end in case they maybe come back and do something in the future.
Well, I mean, I think this was when Wizards
did their shit. Yeah.
Dumbassery. I mean,
this was coming. That bell was rung and it's still resolving.
I don't think that Wizards can completely unring the bell.
No.
I mean,
for some people that bridge is burnt.
Yeah.
So,
and I have to think that, you know, to an extent, the Critical Role team has a right to feel a little burnt. You know,
well, they've kind of painted themselves into a corner of being mouthpieces for that product.
Right. And then,
and if they ever want out, they've got to find an alternative. And it's not going to be the Wendy's role-playing game.
I think that's kind of
funny, because the whole time you guys were talking about this, all I think was, man, Wendy's made a role-playing game one time. Because you're like, oh, there's this dice and this little weird piece and this little thing here. And I'm just like,
yeah.
Put some fry tokens in it, call it a day.
Fry tokens. I just think we need to come up with our hack slash system.
I mean, I like the idea. It's like a simplified, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else is doing it.
Oh, I did like the one thing I kind of liked, but I again, it seemed to like a lot of a lot of bookkeeping was the way they treated armor. Armor wasn't a this just makes you this hard to hit. It was a resource to be expended. And when you hit somebody, you the most you'll ever do to any other target is like 3 hit points.
There was a way to do more than that. They just
well,
you had to do
it kind of balances because like the bard character when you transferred somebody's character into the system, he ended up with like 6 hit points. So they have a system, and it's like the most this class, the bard or whatever, would ever have was like 12 hit points or something. But the way like you hit and you get over a certain number or a certain target, that is considered a critical, and they take the 3. Or if it's a hit, they take 1. If it's a good hit, they take 2 or something. So there was a weird armor, hit points, attack resolution system that they had in place that was kind of new and kind of answered some people's complaint about the way armor works in D&D. It shouldn't make you harder to hit. It should just make you harder to damage, in which it does. It did make me think, is there such thing as a multi-classing in Daggerheart, or is it the talent trees and the cards that let you do that?
Okay, so...
Because it didn't look like there was a multi-class at all.
Sort of. So the cards that you pull from, each class pulls from 2 sets of cards.
Okay.
So what you pull with overlaps with what somebody else is pulling with, so there's a little bit of overlap in that regard.
But no, playing a wizard that is also a thief.
It's not specifically, no, but sorcerer and rogue are like right next to each other in that they overlap in skill sets.
So they don't have dexterity, they have agility.
So you could have some of those abilities.
It's something I think I probably better learn more before I form a real opinion, but from what I've seen so far, it looks like a lot of work to get to the understanding part, and I don't know that I'm there yet. Oh, and the one criticism the video I was watching is some of the card system that you print off and cut out have like the same art. So it's like 3 different abilities, but they all have the same art, which makes them think that there is going to be a product to buy later that each of these cards will have their own unique art, and you know, it'll make it look way more impressive. But that's
well,
like a,
I, there's that. It's also the beta as well. Yeah.
Not everything's done.
Yeah.
Like the whole game is just them selling you the skins.
Yeah, kind of. Because of the world of DLCs and microtransactions, everyone's wary and everyone's buyer beware kind of that shit. So
I don't know.
Like what you kind of smell some of it.
What I have seen of it so far, I liked. I watched the one shot, which was not quite 4.5 hours. And in that, there were three relatively snappily paced combats.
That's the big trick. Can it move fast enough through the action part that people don't get bored? Oh, initiative was weird. Everybody just goes when they want.
Yes. There is a frenetic chaos to combat until there's an understanding of how that works. But
it's like the first round, everybody just decides.
Yeah,
and then you stick to that order,
and then you don't even necessarily have to stick to that order. It really starts to get interesting when people are either rolling with fear or it gets to the point where the DM has enough tokens that they can start taking actions.
Oh yeah, that's right. There were tokens on the in the battle too. Like when you use actions, you spend tokens, right?
Yes. And you can generate those tokens through fear. But
the players have their own that they're spending through hope or something.
They're getting their hope, and they can do some like really cool tag team shit and some interesting stuff with their own sort of background abilities. And they've got background abilities that they can apply potentially in combat, but maybe to other non-combat things, depending. There were aspects of it where it was like, a lot of it's going to come down to what you can negotiate with your DM. And it's like, oh, Ray would like that.
Me being the DM being the negotiator?
I was like, oh, Ray would like that as a player.
Maybe, yeah. If I knew it well enough to understand what I wanted.
Well, no, it's the trick. Like being able to articulate. It's being able to spin something into what you need it to be.
Oh, on the fly in a combat kind of thing?
Just in general. That's your
I was doing that to Chad last week.
You're pretty good at that in general.
Because of this, would you say I have advantage? Yes. Yes. Luckily, Chad puts up with my bullshit when I try that.
Speaking of, it appears to be about that time.
It is. We have rambled. So,
did it.
It is the quadruple D episode. Dune. Dune. Damsel. DuckTales. And Daggerheart.
Woo.
Yeah. So.
Uh-huh.
So thanks for all riding right along.
That's because it's what we do. Excellent.